Welcome to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman & Associates. Here's Connie.
Welcome to Enlightenment of Change on webtalkradio.net. I'm your host, Connie Whitman. Now, I hope you guys, as you listen to the show, that number one, you feel my passion about helping you change your perspective so you can clearly and really become more successful in the future, whatever success means to you. Now, by incorporating little changes that we share on the show, my guests and I share on the show, hopefully you'll be able to create huge impacts with building your client relationships, scaling your business, if that's something you're trying to do, or ultimately growing your income. At the end of the day, for me, it's creating the life that you desire. And I hope my guests and I provide that for you with the tips, tools, and ideas we share. So thanks for joining us every week. Now, my motivational quote, I have to always start with my quote, is by Stephen Covey. And he says, "An empowered organization is one in which individuals have the knowledge, skill, desire, and opportunity to personally succeed in a way that leads to collective organizational success." Now, would you call yourself a leader who empowers or who micromanages your team? And do you trust that your people understand whatever your organizational strategies are? And are they able to put those strategies into practice? Do you trust that? And micromanaging becomes really, really dangerous. And ultimately, it's quite ineffective. Yet so many leaders, I think, fear of letting go and empower their team. So why is that? Well, of course, today I have a guest who's going to answer all these questions. My guest is Kevin Hancock. Now, Kevin is the CEO of Hancock Lumber, one of the oldest companies in America and six-time recipient of the Best Place to Work in Maine. He was awarded that, which is awesome. Now, in 2010, at the peak of the national housing and mortgage market collapse, Kevin acquired a rare neurological voice disordered call, and I'm going to hopefully say this correctly, spasmodic dysphonia, and they call it SD for short. When his own voice became weakened, he developed a whole new way of leading, leadership style based on strengthening the voices of others. Now, his new book, which everybody has to read, it's called The Seventh Power, One CEO's Journey into the Business of Shared Leadership. He shares the philosophy, values, and strategies that his own company, Hancock Lumber Company, has embraced on its journey towards becoming an employee-centric company where leaders' responsibility are broadly shared rather than power coming from that top down. So, Kevin, thank you so much for being on, and I hope I did justice truly for the book and for you, CEO, and for what you're creating in your company in Maine. So thank you for coming on.
Connie, I'm super happy to be with you, and your introduction was so good. I don't think I can possibly live up to that or even add to it. It was lovely. Thank you.
Yeah, and you really are. The book, and before we started recording, I said to Kevin, you know, I just want to set the stage, guys. It's a book about leadership, absolutely, but it's so much more. And Kevin, your own personal journey, really, it's been a crazy journey for you, losing your voice, but how you distilled that into this successful model, and your company is beyond thriving. So my first question is, please tell us about the first few years of you actually running the company.
Yeah, so I began working for the company about almost 30 years ago now, and have been the president and or CEO for over 20. And prior to acquiring my voice condition, my leadership approach was very typical. I would say, ironically, I was the voice of the company. I felt that I was supposed to be everywhere, presiding over every key meeting and making every key statement. If you watched me, it would have looked very typical and traditional. But when I acquired my voice condition, all of that suddenly had to change.
Yeah, in a moment, right? Is this hereditary? Like, where does this the spasmodic dysphonia dysphonia. I don't know if I said that right. The SD. Where did it come from? Is there a cause?
Yeah, that's a funny question. The medical community will say that it has no known cause and no known cure. It's not hereditary, and it's very rare. It affects only maybe 25,000 people in all of North America. When I was diagnosed with it, I'd never heard of it, and I went about 3 years before I even met anybody else that had it. It's just a really rare, rare thing. You know, I'd never thought about my voice before this came on. I used it a lot, but always took it for granted.
And don't we all take things for granted until they're not there anymore? So that's that one piece is just an interesting experience on this journey. So share with us, what impacts did the SD, right, the spasmodic dysphonia, have on the leadership at first for you? Like, what happened?
Yeah, so as you mentioned, Connie, it came on for me during a very difficult time, right at the peak of the housing and mortgage market collapse. But essentially, when you acquire this at first, and I've gotten so much better with it, I wouldn't have been able to talk to you 5 years ago like this. And it doesn't bother me today. I love to share and talk and tell the story. So I want to say that too. But at the time when this first came on, it was really pretty simple. When it's hard to talk, you develop strategies for doing less of it. And my primary strategy, which initially was not designed to be a leadership strategy, I was just protecting my voice. My primary strategy was to answer a question with a question, thereby putting the conversation right back on the other person. So picture this, someone would come up to me at work in a pretty traditional format, because I was the president or CEO, and they'd come to me with a question or a problem. And previously, I would have given an answer and a direction, therefore. But now I started saying things like, well, that is a good question. What do you think we should do about it? And at first, this was just to protect my voice. But over months, I started to see something that really interested me, which was simply this. People already knew what to do. They didn't actually need to begin with, most of the time, a top-down, boss-directed solution. They knew what to do. All they really needed was the encouragement to trust their own voice and a safe culture or platform to have the confidence and to be willing to make their own decisions. And that, in a nutshell, is what got me really interested over time in a brand new approach for me to leadership, which was about dispersing power, not collecting it, and strengthening the voices of others, and creating a shared leadership culture where everybody leads, not just the appointed leaders. Everybody leads.
And I'm in the book, you clearly share that story of how it started. And as I'm reading, I thought, holy smokes. Not only were you dealing with this own, and it had to be pretty upsetting, I would think, to all of a sudden your voice be gone, right? There was no lead up to say, oh, by the way, you're going to lose your voice, that you could prepare for it. It just kind of happened, crisis in your marketplace, specifically with lumber, and now you're dealing with this. That you had the, and I think your PR person who sent you to me and sent the book to me, and I emailed them after reading the book, and I'm like, oh my God, he's brilliant. And here's why. Here's why I thought you were brilliant. So that you had, through tragedy, you had the capacity to sit back, kind of go in the pocket for a minute and observe what was happening by you putting it back on your employees and saying, good question. Hey, what do you think? And them coming up with really good answers and thinking, that's exactly what I would have said. But now you gave them an opportunity to think that you were able to do that. You are very special. I hope you realize that, because I don't know that you really are. Most humans, I don't know, taking that tragedy and having the capacity to observe was remarkable to me. And that really touched me personally in the book. So another question, Kev. Now, so you started out of necessity, so you didn't talk so much, saying, what do you think, right? Did that change over time as you started to observe and see the shift?
Yeah. So what initially was like a defensive approach to protect my voice became an offensive approach to change the very culture of leadership within the company. And as you suggested a moment ago, when I initially acquired my voice condition, I thought of it as a liability or a hindrance or a pain in the neck. But over time, I began to think about it differently. And I said to myself, this was the tipping point. I said, what if this is an invitation? What if it's an invitation to change the way I led, and an invitation to strengthen the voices of others? So we have 550 people that work in our company. And what if giving up just a little bit of my own voice was actually a pathway to strengthening the voices of hundreds of people? That actually would be a blessing. And when I landed there and I came to see it that way, and I saw how people were responding and the company was just becoming so much more dynamic and agile and successful and fun and really about strengthening human capacity, you know, not just making lumber, but about strengthening human capacity. That's when I just started doubling down and doubling down again on this approach.
It's almost like, as out of necessity, right? You spoke less, but people stepped up. And because there's a ton of innovation, if we just allow people to share their perspective, because we can't know everything. There's just no way. So all of a sudden, when you open the can of worms, so to speak, but you open other people's voices, all of this innovation, this fun, the human capacity, I love that phraseology. People step up, and that's what they did, which is remarkable. And that you kept doubling down and doubling down. See, there's the brilliance again, Kevin. You're brilliant, I tell you. that's remarkable. I have another question. Do you think, when you look back and you reflect pre the SD, were you a micromanager or why, or maybe were you first? Yes. But the part B to that question is, why do you think people hold on to that micromanaging when there's models like yours that prove that it works and thrive? Your business started thriving almost immediately, and just quadrupling your results. So why do people micromanage?
Those are such great questions to think about. At the time, I wouldn't have thought I was a micromanager, so to speak. But when I look back on that period now, I really was. And the way I think about it in reflection is I was too dogmatic, essentially. So I had the most important job, as leaders, top leaders often do, and I was able to use that platform to give my voice the loudest, strongest position. And I essentially, I think in hindsight, often just kept talking until others gave in and followed along. Now, and I don't even mean to say that that was poorly intended. I think it's just how leadership traditionally goes. That's what happens. And I've thought a lot about this. I think those who have the most power, they often overreach. They go too far. They overplay their hand, whether they realize it or not. Now, what caused that to the second part of your question, or how do you transcend that? I really think it's ego. It's separating your role from your ego. When I was younger, I really think I thought the performance of the company was my own performance or worth or value. And it took this voice event to get me to stop, as you'd mentioned, to sit still, to listen. And I did begin to hear others better. But the biggest voice I heard better, which is where the change had to start, was my own. I had to want to become a different type of leader. And once I could see it, it became so simple. I wanted to be a leader that helped other people have a stronger voice.
It's simple, but it's not. What you went through wasn't simple. Yet, isn't that funny? As soon as you know something or you see something, you think, well, like 3 minutes ago, why didn't I see that? Like, what? It's so clear to me now, but it's not clear until you see it. And then once you see it, you can't unsee it or unknow it. And you didn't. You didn't bury it and think, yeah, but that's not how it works. I'm the CEO. You started really peeling back that onion and diving in and saying, okay, I get it. I see it. I see the ramifications in a positive way. How can I double down? Your words, I was going to say leverage it and do more with it. You leaned in to the situation. I find that fascinating.
I think what you're saying is so important. I've come to believe simply that seeking is the biggest step in finding. So what really changed for me was my orientation. Before my voice condition, I was super focused on what everyone else was doing. I thought that's what management and leadership was about. After my voice condition, I got a lot more focused on what I was doing, and how I needed to change, and how I might grow, and how as Gandhi so iconically said, how I might become what I wanted to see. And that transition from focusing externally to internally was the slight adjustment that released really big change for me. It was all about where I was looking.
And it's hard. What you just said is hard, to stop and go internally to figure out, you know, what really is the next step for me. And again, parking the ego. I thought that was such a great answer, because it's true. We do have to park our ego. It's not about us, especially if you're running a company. It's about all of those employees and thriving, having that company thrive. And this is just such a better model to give everybody a voice. The innovation has been incredible. Your profits have skyrocketed like ridiculous percentages. So my mom used to say, well, the proof is in the pudding. I don't know if you've ever heard that expression.
Yes, of course.
But proof is in the pudding. And here you have this model. And oh, by the way, it works exponentially. It works. Now, I want to go back. You're that intrinsic, that journey you kind of observed and then went forward internally with yourself. You share a lot of those personal anecdotes from all of the different places that you traveled that taught you a heck of a lot about leadership and depression, which I think that combination, leadership and oppression, those two words going together, is fascinating. Which place do you think was the most impactful for you, and how did these remote places impact your leadership style even further?
Thank you. So the journey that I write about in my book, where I was exploring these principles of shared leadership, as you say, took me all the way from several Indian reservations on the Northern Plains to Kiev in the Ukraine, and I never saw any of it coming, and it was super fascinating. But I guess I would have to say, if I had to pick one spot, it would be where it all started, which was on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota, which is one of the biggest, most historic and traditionally disenfranchised of all the Sioux communities on the Northern Plains. And here's the connection. There, I encountered an entire community that didn't feel fully heard, that felt as if a big piece of their voice had been marginalized or pushed to the side. And so putting my own voice experience together with their community's experience, I really concluded that there were lots of ways for humans to lose their voice in this world, not to not feel fully heard, and that unfortunately, across time, leaders of institutions, be they business or government or whatever, had probably done more to limit, restrict, intimidate, and direct the voices of others than to free them. And that brought me to my favorite question, which is the one that inspires me in the work I do now, and it's simply this. What if everybody on Earth felt trusted, respected, valued, and heard? What might change? And I believe everything might change. It is the one question that I've contemplated that I think could propel humanity forward. It's trying to just help everybody feel trusted, respected, valued, and heard exactly as they are, where they are, on their terms, not on the organization's terms, but on theirs. And then ironically, the place of work is actually prime territory to help people feel heard. Why? First of all, because so many adults do it. They work, you know, so that's where adults are. And second, using that approach can exponentially improve the performance of organizations, so the individuals all benefit, and then that benefit manifests as an outcome back on the company itself.
Yeah, they're doing more and more research, Kevin, right, where they're saying that it used to be the question, what's the most important asset of the organization? And oftentimes it was the board of directors, right? If the board of directors were happy, then everything else was happy. And now they're showing research that your most important asset, really, is if your employees are happy and thriving, the company thrives, and then the board of directors are happy. And your customers, yes. Right, your customers are happy with the service they're getting. So it's that ripple effect, but it has to start with the employee. And we do it the opposite way. And this is what you explain in the book, right? We go with the top down instead of starting with the employee, who's the one who's the most directly connected with the customer.
Lovely. Just as you said it, exactly. I talk about that now as becoming a employee-centric company. We actually, by way of example, at our company, changed our mission. Our mission is to make sure, first, that our employees are having a meaningful experience in more than just economic ways. The economic component is very important, but that's not all of it. We want work to be a place that is meaningful spiritually, emotionally, from a growth standpoint, to the people that work there. And we've seen that when employees are having a great experience, it's almost guaranteed that customers will have a great experience and that the performance of the company will improve. That when employees feel heard, their desire to reciprocate kind of that respect and love back on their company just expands exponentially.
Yeah, and I love that you use the word respect and love. If we don't love each other, like, what the heck are we doing? Because it we're humans. We're all humans. We're all fighting for the same thing, right? Our health, our family's health, production, being able to afford food, a roof over the head, all of those, you know, natural things that we need to survive. Can you share, and if you can't answer this, that's okay, but can you share, because I want everybody listening, because a lot of leaders listen to this show, everything you're saying, they're all thinking. I know what they're thinking. Oh, yeah, this sounds great. That won't work in my organization. Nope, that won't work. Can you talk about from need, right, losing your voice, you shifted it back over to the employees, but can you talk about the profits? Because let's face it, a business is a business to make money and to be able to hire people and continue to have payroll and all of those things. Can you talk about the profits and what really has the scaling was crazy, Kevin?
Yes, and I'm comfortable talking about it, not to make a statement about ourselves, but to share the potential of these ideas.
Yes.
So to keep it simple, our company's been in business since 1848, so before the first cannonball was fired in the Civil War. And in the decade from 2010 until 2020, when we decided to become a power dispersing organization, we earned more money than we did from 1848 to 2009. I'm just going to keep it at that. And it's not that the company didn't do well before. It did do well. But our performance took off, and that created so much more capacity to keep reinvesting in the company, in the employee experience, and you just get this flywheel that everyone in business can picture that is suddenly running and governing itself. And the other thing I'd like to say about that too, because the other piece of concern I hear a lot is, well, if everyone has their voice, doesn't that mean an increase in chaos and a lack of discipline? And what we found, it was just the opposite. And I've come to talk about it this way. People are much more apt to support that which they helped to create. So when you create processes that allow everybody safely to talk about what they think, they are much more likely in return to support the outcomes in terms of policy, best practices, priorities, and discipline. So for us, dispersing power increased our accuracy, increased our discipline, and increased our consistency.
Because the employee owns it. So
correct.
They own it, they buy into it, they move into action a heck of a lot quicker versus, here they go again. Now they're making us do, they, meaning the company, is making us do this. And now they're making, they don't even know what it's like being on the front line, right? These they, oh, it's they and me kind of mentality. Thank you for being comfortable sharing that, because in the book, when I was reading it, I'm thinking, holy crap, this works. Like, proof is in the pudding, right? It just was, So I just, you live and breathe it, but the results are documented. And that, the way you just said, from 1848 to, 2009, and now this last decade that you've made more money than that entire time, and your company was successful and had employed, you know, hundreds of employees over the years, is remarkable. So I just had to make sure you shared that. We're almost out of time, but I have one more question. So everybody that's listening, what do you think the first thing, because here's what they're saying, well, what if my CEO doesn't agree with Kevin's methodology, right, or practicality of implementation? So how can a leader, no matter what level in the organization, how can they take what you're saying? First of all, read the book, everybody. But in addition to that, how could they take your recommendations and start making a difference right after they listen to the show?
Yeah, that's such an important question. And I think the essence of the answer is the focus of this approach is on liberating yourself and looking inward and having the calmness and centeredness to transcend what others are doing around you and to become the person you want to be in an imperfect world. You know, I understand the challenge, but I think we got to all call ourselves out on that. If we're all waiting for the rest of the world around us to get it figured out before we make a move, we'll never make a move. So everyone has that out that you just teed up in that question. And I think this discussion in my book is really a personal invitation for everyone to become a leader of you, and for you to develop the identity that you want to have and to be able to carry it in the wind of an imperfect world, even when you're surrounded at times by others who may not see what you see.
And at the end, it's finding your voice. That's the irony of this whole thing. You lost your voice to find your voice and to empower other voices. I'm downplaying your situation with your voice, but it's almost like a beautiful, transition. You know, you lost your voice to find your voice and see with clarity what you should be doing, and then empowering all these other voices and making work fun and profitable. To me, like, the winning combination is crazy, and that it started with a voice, you know, a voice disorder. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it kind of blows my mind a little bit, Kevin.
Yeah, no, thank you. And I feel really fortunate. I had a quick story. I had a dream a short while back where an angel type figure appeared and offered to back me up in my life about 15 years. This would have been before I acquired the disorder in 2010. And I panicked in the dream and I said to the angel, no, 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 I don't want to go, because if I back up, I might not get SD again. And
really?
I just hit the point where what little it took is so much smaller than what it gave. And I've really come to see it as a gift. Like, I was blessed to get this, and it nudged me into my own true voice, and I'm just so thankful for that.
Can I tell you what, Kevin, also the way you write it, it was so human, and the stories, and that, and we don't have time, we're out of time, but that little boy who gave you the journal and who was writing, and he asked you questions, and this kid, I thought, holy crap, he's a smart kid, right? He should take over Kevin's business. When Kevin retired, you know,
he is super smart. It might Yes.
Brilliant young man. And so all the people you encountered and learning from the earth while being on these, tribal lands and stuff. And the wolf, there was a story about the wolf. We can't get into it all, but the imagery, as I was reading it, I'm scratching my head saying, uh-huh. Like, it made so much sense. And it all started with a voice disorder. When you keep going back to that, if people don't believe this, and I know you just said it, you find this disorder a blessing, everything happens for a reason. And sometimes at the time we don't understand it, but now 10 years you reflecting back, you think, this is what needed to happen. And it's really a great thing and it's a blessing. So just thank you for articulating so well for my show, just your ideas and the simplicity of what you're recommending. And again, I'm not oversimplifying, but it really is a simple concept to implement. I hope people heed your warning and empower their people. Everybody, please buy Kevin's book. It's such a great read. It's called The Seventh Power, One CEO's Journey into the Business of Shared Leadership. And for any leader, if you don't read it, I think you're making a fatal mistake with your own career, because we need it as a community, the United States, but I think globally with everything that's going on and has gone on with COVID. Kevin, this is such a great opportunity for, I think, even more innovation as we come out of the quarantine and as they start to loosen restraints. I don't know. Do you agree with that?
I totally do. Think about it this way. Who has to lead this country and planet's response to COVID-19? The answer is everybody. The virus travels one human at a time, and it is such a great example of what we're talking about. The only way to overcome it is through everybody's leadership, which is what will happen. And I think this can be an example of the new age of shared power and dispersed leadership.
Yeah, it's, again, everything happens for a reason. All of a sudden, COVID came out of nowhere. Why? We're supposed to learn something from this, again, from a human perspective, but I think from organizations, from a business perspective, because it hit everybody on a global scale. Nothing's ever going to be the same. How can we come out of this better and thrive more? And I love how you said that, and save the earth, because right, they're saying that now that we're not driving as much and people are, staying home more, that the earth is healing itself that quickly. We're talking 6 weeks and the earth is able to heal itself. The earth knows what to do. We're killing it, right? We don't know what we're doing. We're the problem, Cap. Oh my goodness. So everybody, listen, buy the book. And also, if you're interested, please check out Kevin's website. It's Kevin D like David Hancock.com. Promise I'll put the I'll put Kevin's link on the Web Talk Radio Enlightenment of Change website, so you guys can find it backlink. Also, go to my website. I'm offering that free communication style assessment. It's just another tool, gives you insight of some of your communication superpowers and some of your blind spots and why maybe people annoy you or you annoy people. And it just gives you some in enlightenment from that realm. And just go to whitmanassos.com/CSA, communication style assessment, CSA. Check it out. So hopefully what Kevin and I shared today are yet more tools for you to use and navigate change. Today, we really spoke from a leadership perspective, and hopefully Kevin experience, but also Kevin's being the CEO and talking about the thriving company he runs. Hopefully you got some ideas. That's the objective of the show. Kevin, I can't thank you enough. I am beyond impressed with you. The book is, I think it should become, you become a new leader in an organization. They should make this a mandatory book to read from an education standpoint. I hope it does. I hope it becomes one of those Stephen Covey type of books that we give to our new leaders. So thank you so much for being on.
Connie, it was a pleasure. And I want to just say, I love your personal energy and the mission of this show. I'm really honored to have spent this time with you. So Thank you.
Thank you so much. Don't click out. I want to just say a nice thank you when we're done. But thank you so much for sharing and being so candid. And thank you for the book. Honestly, I think, Kevin, I started reading it on a Sunday. It was rainy. And I'm like, I think I'm going to read today. So I had to read your book. And I started reading. I think I read half of it in one sitting because it really is a nice, easy read. You speak very candidly. And the stories and anecdotes. And I love the pictures, too, that you shared. So that as you were talking about places like the young man with the journal writing, there's a picture. I think you guys are at a picnic bench. So I really loved that too. I enjoyed seeing the visuals. I'm a visual learner. So that was helpful too. So thank you so much. I'm so happy I got to meet you.
Thank you.
A real pleasure. And you guys, I hope you will join me weekly as we question, build, and discover together that this thing we call change, you've got it. I'm giving you tools. My guests are giving you tools. Do something. Make the choice to move forward because you do have a choice. And not making a choice is making a choice. So beware. Go out and try the little tips that Kevin shared today. Try the little tips that we share on the show. I wish you all just success moving forward. Thank you for joining us today. Truly a great conversation. I hope you got a lot out of it. You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with me, your host, Connie Whitman, on webtalkradio.net. Thank you, everyone. And really have an inspired week, and of course, stay safe. Thanks, everybody.
You've been listening to Enlightenment of Change with Connie Whitman of Whitman and Associates. To learn more about Connie, visit her website, WhitmanASSOC.com. Thank you for tuning in. We're glad you were here.